Hi everyone, welcome to the India Independent Films Podcast, where we talk about films and film writing. I am Pankaj Sachdeva. I have with me Rahul Desai, critic for the Film Companion and other publications. So we spoke a little two, 3 weeks ago, but this might be sort of our year-end podcast before we meet again in the next year. So I was hoping we'll talk a little bit about how the year went by, and especially focusing a little bit on some of the reviews that Rahul has written. So before we go there, Rahul, how have the last few weeks been?
Hi, Pankaj. The last few weeks have been probably very busy, probably the busiest phase of my year so far. It's been a very interesting few weeks because a lot of releases. Of course, Annival was part of that, so the discourse is still on. We know how that has divided so many people, across on the internet and out of it. And I'm just sort of done with Annival discourse, so we'll move on from there. There were some good films I managed to watch last week. Actually, I very much like Devashish Makija's Joram, which is, I think, still playing in theaters maybe for a couple of days. And I also liked this lovely little film on Amazon called Mast Mein Rehne Ka, which stars Jackie Shroff and Nina Gupta. And I think that was a surprise for a lot of people last week, a lot of reviewers as well, because it was a packed week. There were like some five or six titles to write about. And it was a very nice little Bombay film, a very nice ode to Bombay. Reminded me very much of Tu Hai Mera Sunday. Even that is also one of the films that have really, over the years, have grown a fan base. So I think Mast Mein Rehne Ka would like be a great reco in December if someone's looking for something very disarming and small and honest. Because there are a lot of big releases around. This tends to get lost in all that. So I'm glad once in a while our job allows us to find these films.
Right. Is it? I somehow thought, it's same as that short film Khujli, right? Khujli was.
Yeah, they used the same cast. I think they used the same cast because they were pretty sweet together in Khujli, right? Like I remember that, and people were wondering why they aren't doing more roles then. I think this is a nice extension in a way.
Yeah, because when I saw, I thought, is it the same film? But I think it's directed by Vijay Maurya, the one, the very famous, now famous, who's also was in Gully Boy and Tumhari Sulu. He's acted well. Okay, that's good. I know Animal Discourse has just taken a life of its own, which we sort of were expecting, which was sort of the intention of the director. But anyway, okay, so now let's come to how this year went by. So I'll first start with what has been your personal favorite piece to write. I know the answer, but I would like to know.
You know the answer. That's interesting. I feel like I've like talked about this earlier maybe, and sometimes I just like when you've written like a piece you're really proud of. I think for me it was, I guess, Past Lives and After Sun. At the beginning of the year it was After Sun, even though After Sun was a 2022 film. I watched it like last December, but I wrote about it this January, and Past Lives I think like mid-year sometime this year. I did a lot of reviews. Like these weren't like reviews. These were like longer pieces, columns. But in terms of reviews, I'm not really sure because, I do so many of them that it's really hard to, one of the things of being like a weekly film critic is like, you don't have time to dwell over what you've written, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether you're satisfied with it, because in 2 days you have to like put yourself in another world immediately and start reviewing the next week's film. So I forget very fast, and I think because of that, like at the end of the year, maybe if I have a weekend free or something, I'll maybe go over like pieces I've written or reviews I've written, because there are many, and I'm sure like there are some of them I'd really like to revisit.
Right. So I went through your reviews. I think the site isn't as user friendly. It was just mixing a little bit on 2021 reviews, but it worked till April. But okay, so I have pasted this Past Lives review. Now tell us, what's your favorite part about this? Now read to us like an author.
About the Past Lives review.
What is your favorite?
Actually, I missed the Past Lives release when it released in theaters here, and I wasn't in town then. And I remember coming back and a lot of colleagues and people reaching out to me saying, you need to watch that film, you will like it. Basically, I'm that predictable. People knew immediately that, you know, Past Lives is my kind of film. So then I watched it, like I took my time, watched it. And as soon as I watched it, I realized that, you know, I need to write about it. It'll take a week or so, but I really wanted to pitch it as a column. And even though the reviews of Past Lives are already out and all, it was a very difficult sort of, I mean, it's not often you tend to get published when something is not timely. So I just tried to make a column out of it because I just was desperate to write about the film. I remember pitching it to my editor and saying, like, please let me write this piece because, you know, this is one of those pieces that come once in a year. And this was before writing it. So I was like, this is one of the pieces that I think I can really do justice to. I know we've reviewed it, but I really need to write it. So I'm glad, you know, like I was able to do that when it wasn't in the discourse. When it wasn't sort of part of the entire release discourse. So I am going through the piece right now. Actually, you know, the funny part about writing this piece is because you go through a journey while writing it. I think you sort of internalize it so much that when I read it later, when you're in the zone, and when I read it later, it's very difficult to say that, it's very difficult to sort of even recognize the person who sort of written it. But like, I think this is my favorite part, where I think I write about Arthur. I'm going to read out, okay, the hug they share at the end is both a reckoning and a relief because neither of them got swept away by the sentimentalism of fiction. And it hurts because a tender tragedy stared them in their face. They survive an entire history of tropes and unions, which is to say the married couple come to symbolize the stories that happen to us while we are busy making other plans. Or more specifically, they represent life itself in all its casual depth and anonymities and muted intimacies. Storytelling is a descendant of life, which is why Haesang probably realizes that he was never competition to begin with. If anything, he's the one that stands no chance against the invisible gratifications of living. I think I really liked writing this part because at the end of this part, I felt like I was getting into my thoughts about the piece properly. Because up till then, I was trying to figure out what my angle is. But I think this was the part that it was very satisfying to write.
Was the husband your favorite character?
Like, yeah, sure. I think I wrote about it because I feel like I've been, I think the beauty is that you're either one of, like, as a man at least, like in who's been in relationships, who's been fortunate enough to like have some very lovely relationships. I've been on either side, right? Like, you're either the you know, the Korean childhood friend who wants to sort of find a story in his friend and like wants to be the original love, or you're the husband. And the beauty about the husband character is that it's also played by an actor who doesn't usually play like positive roles, like morally upright roles or positive roles. And I think I very much related to the husband in this because I think I'm in that phase of life right now where, you know, you're with someone from a different culture and you wonder if you knew them entirely. You wonder if you ever knew them because, you know, they think differently. They think in a different language. And there is always someone from their past lives also who they have a connection with. So that's the beauty of adult relationships also, I feel. Like when you meet someone, you feel like you knew them your entire life. But the fact is that I think there's always a part of their life that you'll never know. And I think this film lays that out beautifully.
Right. I am always late in watching films, but I finally also saw Past Lives, so that's why it's very fresh in my memory. And I was just amazed by the husband's character. Like he turns out to be, you know, he says I'm going to be the evil white husband, but
Yeah.
actually he's somebody who comes across very nice. And
Yeah.
but yeah, that's the whole complexity of relationships. Do you think it'll win an Oscar with that knowledge?
I probably don't think so. Like, I think the competition is very high. And I think it'll be nominated a bunch of times, and I think that should be enough. Also, awards, like, it's really hard to judge through, and I'm just glad it's getting, like, all that. It's gone global, and it's getting the attention it does, because it has fans all over the world. Also, has a lot of detractors. I've seen the discourse. It's been very interesting. But I'm glad it's one of the small films that will make it to, you know, like, a lot of categories.
Hi. Now, in terms of Hindi films, was Jawan one of your enjoyable reviews that you remember writing?
That's an interesting one. You know, the thing about like a lot of the big Hindi films that have released this year, I think a lot of us have had to watch it on Friday morning and like turn out a review within like 2 or 3 hours. And like we didn't have like 2 days or 1 day to think about it. You have to immediately take a direction in your review and stick to it for better or worse. So on that, in that sense, I'd say like, I think like Rocky or Rani was, I think I enjoyed writing that one. Not enjoyed, but I think it was as good as I could have written in that amount of time. And I think Jawan, I think, would come close also. But like, I very much enjoyed like reading other reviews about Jawan too. So I think like everyone did a fantastic job writing about it. And I love films that make you have, make you sort of dig deeper into your psyche to, you know, like explore why you like a film that maybe a couple of years ago you might not have liked. And I think that was the case for me in Jawan. I very much enjoyed, like, I think Ishita's, Gupta's review on Jawan as well. I think she had written it very well. And we, I mean, I think all of us had like very limited time to write it. But it was a good experience. Eventually, I think it was a good sort of experience to have gone through.
Do you remember any, like, have any favorite moments from Jawan? Anything that, like,
yeah,
you know, you look back?
Like, a lot of the, I mean, I really, first of all, enjoyed going for an early morning show. I think it was a 6:30 a.m. show. It was houseful. It felt like you were back in the 90s, you know, people cheering for a hero and stuff like that. But I really enjoyed, like, when Shah Rukh makes, like, the older Shah Rukh makes his entry before the interval. I think that was one of my favorite on-screen Hindi film moments of the year. Like, when Vikram Rathod, the older one, sort of comes to rescue his son just before. I think that really stood out. And I think I watched it a couple of times now that it's on streaming.
Got it. And was, did you feel the same in Pathaan as well?
Pathaan, so again, you know, I wasn't in town when it released, so I missed reviewing it in real time. But when I came back, and I had to write a piece about it, so I watched it later than others, but the discourse was still there, and the theaters were still full. So I think I went to watch it. A lot of people were watching it for the second time already. And that was the peak of Shah Rukh mania after many years, right? Like, that was the return of Shah Rukh before Jawan as well. Jawan was like almost consolidation in a way. But Pathaan was a very special experience to go through, because you didn't think that this would happen again. Not just Shah Rukh, in terms of any Bollywood star. And we didn't know where we were heading in 2023. So I remember writing about Pathaan, and I actually liked writing that piece because I had my time to think about it. I didn't have to specifically write about the film. I could write about a broader context about why it worked and why Shah Rukh is more important than just the roles he does. So I appreciate that, you know, I could write an essay and not a review about Pathaan. And I think that was the best way to do it, because I remember even Pathaan had released, like, there were no press shows. I think everyone had to watch early morning and immediately write, like, in a big hurry. And it was quite intimidating.
Right. And any hopes from Dunki, whatever?
it's hard to say, really, because, I mean, it's a hat trick of Shah Rukh films this year, and I've seen a couple of trailers, but, you know, I don't know. I really don't know what to make of, like, trailers in general, because if you remember, the Pathaan trailers weren't impressive, and a lot of people, like, were blown away by the film. Dunki, what's interesting is that this was the first film Shah Rukh signed before like Jawan and Pathan. Like, he really wanted to make a comeback with like the most successful director, which is Hirani. So I think when Shah Rukh needed it the most, he signed this film. And then I don't think anyone expected Pathan and Jawan to do so well and become such super. So the Shah Rukh at the beginning of the year before Pathan is very different from the Shah Rukh we see right now. And the Shah Rukh last year or last to last year signed Donkey when he was, I think, almost down and out and sort of not as successful as he was right now. So I want to see if Shah Rukh the actor sort of shines through in a film like this, because he's clearly not playing, like, he's not feeding his superstar persona like he did in Jawan and Pathan. There can't be any self-reflexive stuff, no meta stuff. It's just a film about something and about a particular culture from what it seems like. And I want to see if Shah Rukh still has it, you know, as a performer.
So, you know, one of the criticisms that I've read about these films of Shah Rukh has been just they've made enough money. But if you look back at it, they've not had that kind of, you know, like memorable scenes or like something like an iconic Jab Bhi Met sort of a, you know, those chakte sort of a thing. It is just making money. They're not memorable enough. Would you agree with this criticism?
I mean, very different kinds of films have become successful this year. Like, there's been no set pattern. Almost every film with a star has become successful. It's almost like Bollywood making a comeback of sorts, box office wise. So, I mean, I agree and disagree, because, like, I will remember the films themselves rather than moments of the films. I will remember that the film happened and that this was the year everything sort of went back in time, and Shah Rukh became that big superstar that he was a long time ago. And I'd say, like, these are commercial entertainers. These are, like, very mainstream films. And I wouldn't have expected to enjoy them, as I mentioned earlier, a couple of years ago. And it's true that it's a very different kind of cinema. It's like, it's really massy in that sense. And it's, I think a lot of people enjoyed it for different reasons. So, and that the real world context really added to it, because Shah Rukh has been in the news for various reasons last couple of years. So I guess I'll remember the year as like a Shah Rukh year. I'll remember Jawan, of course. I'll remember Pathan. But it's true that it's not like, you know, storytelling in its purest sense or anything. It's a lot of, like, it's almost auto-fiction in a way. It's almost Shah Rukh telling a story through these films and in the most accessible way. So, I guess it's true to an extent, which is why I'm very curious about Donkey, if it might have those classic Shah Rukh moments or the classic Hirani moments or something we might remember down the line. But yeah, when people like look back on his career, maybe a decade or two later, when, you know, he's not acting anymore, then I don't think a lot of people will put their favorite scenes or favorite films as Jawan or Pathan. There'll be too much on his CV, on his resume, to like really put this in your top 5 or top 10 Shah Rukh films. But you have to live through 2023 to know the significance of them.
Now, you said it's Shah Rukh's year. It's also Manoj Bajpayee's year. He's had many releases, like Gulmohar, and then Sirf Ek Banda Kaafi Hai, Family Man 2. Family Man 2 was not this year. But yeah. The recent one, Joram, and others. So what's been your favorite Manoj Bajpayee work this year?
I feel like almost every year since streaming has been Manoj Bajpayee's year, thanks to like Family Man. Thanks to the choices he's been making, and he's very prolific, thankfully, and he does a lot of great work. Like this year also, he's had like 3 very like remarkable performances, 2 of them in average films, I'd say. Sirf Ek Banda Kaafi Hai, and even Gulmohar didn't work entirely for me, but he's the kind of actor that can stand out in like average material and sort of elevate the film single-handedly. And I think I remember moments of his from Gulmohar. I remember like the way he's such a physical actor without really being physical in a conventional sense, like not action physical, but more like day-to-day physical. Like his face does so much that so many other actors cannot do. And I think I remember a lot of moments from Gulmohar where he's just like, just sitting in his car on the other side of the road, watching like a particular man in a tea shop. And it's just those silent moments that you tend to remember good actors in. And I think he's done and his monologues in Sirf Ek Banda Kaafi Hai were very, like, very well acted. And, you know, I could almost see that he was almost in conflict with the film itself, which was not very well made, in my opinion. And Joram, for me, was probably one of my favorite performances of him this year, because probably my favorite performance. First of all, very demanding film. Secondly, it reminded me of, I think Uday mentioned a couple of days ago when we were discussing it on the podcast, it reminded him of, I think, Manoj Bajpayee's turn in the Abhishek Chaubey film, the Decoy film. What's the, I'm forgetting the name.
Soan Chedia, right?
And Manoj Bajpayee and Soan Chedia was one of those very underrated performances, because he was only there for the first half an hour. A lot of it was flashback, and he was like the leader of Decoys there, but he was haunted by his past. And I think Joram is a similar role, except like here he is also the victim, and he plays an Adivasi man who's sort of trying to escape his past as an Naxalite. So I think it's a very physical performance again. You know, it's a very difficult role to pull off, and even though it may seem like he's maybe slightly like over the top in some scenes, the way he reacts, but you could also see that it's his character's trauma. So I really thought it was a very, like, very difficult performance and very well done by him.
Now tell us your favorite moment from Rocky or Rani.
Rocky or Rani, I mean, I guess one of the films I've enjoyed the most this year, Hindi films wise. What did I enjoy the most in that? I think a lot of the Ranveer scenes, I think the monologue that he gives when I think Alia's character is breaking up with him for the first time, and you know, he, like, when he's come to surprise her and she breaks up with him the first time, and the way he slowly breaks down while speaking, but also like is trying to, his voice is breaking, he's also trying to like be very like westerly at the same time. I think that really worked for me. Like, that's one of the moments that stuck with me, because it really reminded a lot of people of how good Ranveer can be as an actor, you know, when he chooses the right material, when his character and his persona really feed into each other. For me, that was like, that really stood out. Like, and of course, like, there are a lot of Dharmendra scenes also that stood out, because for me, it was a great, like, great casting, very good performance also. And it's always, like, melts me to see, like, older sort of veteran stars playing, like, old characters, and especially old men with dementia or older characters with any... And I thought it was very, like, well-calibrated in this film.
Now, talking about the... It's the year of the Deols. All three Deols have sort of been in news. Yeah. What's been your favorite Deol performance?
It's true. Abhay Deol was in Trial by Fire. He was pretty solid in that, actually. And Sunny Deol, as we know, had Gadar 2. Bobby Deol had Animal. In fact, even Sunny Deol's son, Rajveer Deol, And you know, he also had, like, I'd say he had some kind of presence in that film, like, there is potential, I'd say. So all of them had releases this year, and I mean, I enjoyed Dharmendra the most, like, in Rocky or Rani, because I think it was, again, as I said, great casting and very well directed, because it's not easy, like, to watch like a old star sort of more or less play a version of himself on screen. And I think it was a very, like, without being like too self-serious, it was fairly playful performance also. So I think I enjoyed that in terms of the Deol family. Even Abhay Deol in Trial by Fire was a very like a very compelling presence, because the series actually belonged to Rajshri Deshpande. It was her journey as a parent, and for him to play like this almost his beta husband who's also going through his own journey of grief, wondering how to deal with the whole situation. I think it was a very nice stoic presence, and it's one of the few Abhay Deol performances that, you know, I've really like come to sort of admire.
Right. Was anybody miscast in Rocky or Rani, did you feel?
Was anybody miscast? Not really, actually. Like, I think everyone was... the good thing is everyone seemed to be enjoying themselves on screen. Even the Bengali actors were cast very well. I was sort of surprised to see Shabana Azmi in it. But I think it required her sort of like poise and presence to pull off that role of a sort of a progressive grandmother who also had a very compelling backstory. You know, something like it could have been in another film, like an extramarital affair, but here it felt purer. Also, it's a Karan Johar film, so there was a sense of like sacrifice to it and a sense of like also agency to it. So I don't think anybody was miscast really.
Right. I think of like that film, I think that Dolare moment, I know it's popular. It was just so well done. Like, it was just the surprise package, how it just came across, like nobody expected, and very well danced by both of those men. So I think it was very well done. Okay, is this the year of criticism of Zoya Akhtar? I don't think she's ever received that much criticism. Maybe this year, Archie's as well as Made in Heaven.
That's a good point, because I think this has also been her most prolific year. So it's only like it was always going to be a mixed bag in a way. But yeah, I guess not a lot of people expected her to sort of have a hit or miss year, because there was great anticipation for Made in Heaven 2, and that was the one that divided people the most. And I think that got a lot of criticism as well, and rightfully so. Like, I think they were behind Dahad as well. And Dahad, you know, even though it had a little criticism here and there, I quite liked that show. And I thought Vijay Verma's performance in that show is one of the best in the year. Normally, Vijay Verma, whenever he does something, it's always difficult to take your eyes off. He's also had a fantastic year. So I think Dahad was probably Zoya Akhtar's best work in a way. And her and Reema Kakti. Archie's was like fairly middling in terms of what she could have achieved and what she did. And I think Made in Heaven was a miss for me. Like it was disappointing on many levels and felt really performative. So I think, yeah, maybe she might not consider it like a year where she got a lot of criticism, but it's always a good thing, because I think it'll hold her in good stead for the future. I'm very interested to see what she does in the in the coming years, what she directs, if she's going to stick to because nobody expects her to have a star-kid launch vehicle, like to do her version of a student of the year. So let's see where she heads in after that. I just hope she is as versatile as she always has been, because three very different titles again this year, like Archie's The Hard and Maiden Heaven 2. So it's nice to see that she's still around and prolific. Like, I'd rather have her on an off year than a lot of directors in their good years.
And I think her Kho Gaye Hum Kaha, she's written it as well. And that's what, you know, to be very honest, she has never really made bad stuff. It might be dividing, or it might not be great, but she's never made, you know, something terrible, absolutely terrible. Every director has that one film, right? She's never really made, at least till now, that, okay, even Archie's is very well made. so beautifully made. And yes, the storyline is not that powerful, but I think what they were going for, I think you also mentioned in the review, it works in that level. But I guess the expectation were maybe too much. And the overhype of promotions and all that sort of thing.
I mean, if you're Zoya Akhtar, you're always going to be held to your own standards, right? Like, like her. And it's always going to be difficult. Like Vishal Bhadwaj, you know, like everything he makes is always going to be measured up to like something like Heather or, you know, Maqbool. So it's always going to be a losing battle in that sense. But it's also impossible not to appreciate even their so-called weak work like this year, basically.
Okay. Now, you've written two Shah Rukh pieces. One was Kabhi Haan Kabhi Na, and the other was Two Decades of Pure Feeling. Which one did you like more? And do you have any memories of that? I know it's been almost a year, Jan and March.
Wow, it's I'd forgotten I'd written that this year. For some reason, it felt like last year. No, I really enjoyed writing the Kabhi Haan Kabhi Na piece. Like it was always in my head, and it's my favorite Shah Rukh film. It's probably one of my favorite Hindi films of all time. So I quite like. I mean, I don't have great memory. Like I don't have like very vivid memories of writing the piece, but I can say that it's one of the few films that, you know, is so part of my fundamental like DNA of Hindi. A movie-loving person, that it wasn't like as difficult to write as a lot of other pieces this year.
Right. And I remember, I think, you know, you had written the same line and Shah Rukh wrote that line a few days later.
We did something like that and I was like, oh God, all you could have done is like just given credit, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that line was wins the day by losing the moment. I have noted it down. And I think Shah Rukh tweeted it a few days later. And it was like, okay, it was very clear that he, like, it is inspired from that piece.
Yeah.
So I remember. What's your favorite scene from Kabhi Na Kabhi Na? What's your memory?
My favorite scene from it is... it's definitely the last, the climax in the church when I have so many memories of it. I think I wrote about it also that, you know, I had such different interpretations of it as a kid. I thought like if that ring is rolling down the floor and whoever finds it will marry Anna as a child. And that's what I thought, like it was a competition and he saw it, but he didn't tell her that he found the ring. And I thought that's a great sacrifice. But that scene for me will remain in my head throughout my life. Like I will never forget it for whatever reason. Through my childhood, I've always had different interpretations of it. I've always had lovely memories of it. And I keep writing about it whenever I have the chance. I think I wrote about it in the piece also. It's probably my favorite scene of the film when Anna and Chris are getting married and Shah Rukh is standing next to them as the best man. Because when he's on his way to the church on the bike, you think that he's the groom. At least that was how it was designed back then. And just the way he's standing in the church and his sister, younger sister, is looking at him and breaking down, realizing that his heart is broken. It still gets me. After all these years, I still tear up.
You know, I've read this film theory, which says that the films that we love in our childhood, you know, like 13 to 17 years of age, they become our foundational. And it's very hard to love any other film after you grow up, howsoever it would be. Like even as adults, you know, we might love so many films, but we might not really feel that love as an innocence. Do you agree with that? Or
that's a fascinating theory, because I thought about this. What exactly is nostalgia? What is it about being a child that, you know, certain memories become permanent memory, like that film Inside Out, right? Like you have like core memories that stay with you for the rest of your life, irrespective of how those films age and what they... So I feel like it's very similar to your relationship with your parents, how they nurture you and how you look at them a certain way. That connection will be maintained throughout your life, and they will always be your parents, and you'll always have that very special connection with them that started from your childhood. So I think it's the same holds for your relationship with art also. I think you get attached to art the same way you get attached to certain family members in your childhood, your parents or your siblings or your childhood friends, and there's always going to be that connection in that age bracket that will stay with you for the rest of your life, for better or worse, you know. And I think Kabhiya Kabina is part of my canon as a child, and I associate it very much with my parents for a reason also. Like, even though it has nothing to do with them narratively, I always only remember watching it with my dad because it was his favorite film also. So so I think it's the same. It's a good theory, and it gives a lot to think about in terms of how we get attached to certain things in our childhood, whether people or places or films, and it stays with you. Because I have the same attachment to certain places also as a child that will never leave me.
Right. Very beautiful. And now, you know, there was this Cricket World Cup. You wrote a piece on that. Where is Indian cricket headed? This is a general question, not necessarily writing.
Yeah, that's a fascinating. It'll take 2-3 podcasts to talk about that. But, you know, like, it's hard not to be cynical, but it's also hard not to be hopeful, because, you know, you're Indian, as an Indian cricket fan, if you grew up through the 90s like I did, you were always the underdog, and you were always used to being second or third or fourth best, or being a one-man team. And I guess now we're in an era where, like, I think we have all the resources, all the money in the world, and we are not able to win the big tournaments, and that's been happening for 10 years now. So I think that cynicism has crept into, like, fans of my age, like mid-30s, late-30s, especially people who know that, you know, we followed cricket for so long, and there's never going to come a time when we don't follow cricket. And by association, we support the Indian team. And I really felt for the players in this World Cup more than anything else. Like, a lot of us tend to conflate our distaste for the BCCI and the management with the players themselves. And I think one thing I learned from this World Cup is to draw a line between both of them, and to keep your love for the cricketers pure and nostalgic and whatever, personal, like my love for Rohit Sharma or my love for any of the players, and my absolute, like, disgust for what the BCCI stands for and the management stands for, and what Indian cricket in general stands for, is in another zone altogether. So I hope to, like, it's going to head in the same direction. I think, like, the culture is not going to change anytime soon. So it's really hard to say. I just hope that we get moments of sort of just, like, purity in a way that takes us back to the days we really loved the sport as a child. And that, I think, this happened to a lot of us during this World Cup with the cricket they were playing, not with the fact that we were playing at home or the BCCI was sort of, like, almost had made a hash of the whole thing, but just watching them bat and bowl and field was a nice thing. And hopefully we have more moments like that in the future, and we can separate our reading of the politics behind it.
Now, tell me some of your other memorable scenes from films of this year. Whatever comes to your mind. There was Rocky and Rani, but anything else from any film that comes to your mind? It could be good or bad, both.
Good or bad. That's a tough one. Scenes are always tough. I think I'd have to, like, really look at a list for this. But, I mean, you could start with something you remember first. Maybe then I can think of something.
So I will say about I remember that thing about the concept of Kintsugi from Pathan,
where
he says, you know, that broken things like become more beautiful. There is this whole concept of like the Japanese concept of that. So I think, although Pathan didn't really work for me, but I think, you know, as we were talking about how that film was sort of come back for Shah Rukh, and how they basically just face, like, we see the first time he's broken, like, and he says, I have that surgery and all those sort of things. I think that was nicely done. And then they say, like, Rafe, something, Ghungru Toot Gaye, something, you know.
Yeah.
That's also very nicely done. And then I remember other thing was, of course, Rocky and Rani, I said this. But since, of course, it's a recency bias, I think this scene in the Archies where Dilton and Reggie, that's a very nice scene. And I wanted to just say, like, to Twinkle Khanna, because she is obnoxious to Karan Johar. I was reading an article. She just said very, very harsh things about, you know, Karan Johar's, like, sexuality. When somebody is not willing to talk about it, just don't put it down. So I was like, okay, somebody should tell Twinkle Khanna to just read this. And then, of course, there was also, you know, Satya Prem Ki Katha. I didn't like that film a lot, but there was a moment there where the mother says, you know, if you don't like somebody, just basically don't increase somebody's pain if you can't help out somebody. So, I mean, of course, more will come later, but I know one scene that just broke everybody's audience, like, was that Bawal, that that Auschwitz, that thing.
I know what you mean. I mean, yeah, that, you know, I know also, I mean, a lot of people also, like Bawal for what it was trying to say. And I, like, I totally get that. But for me, like, how it came across on screen was a big issue. That was definitely a memorable moment, for better or worse, in this year. Especially the Auschwitz line. I mean, that would actually be definitive for a lot of people this year, because I think it got a lot of, like, maximum criticism online and went through a lot of controversy after that, you know, across all platforms. But yeah, I mean, I also have, like, I really like that moment in Archies. I'm glad you mentioned it. First of all, it came from the most unexpected source, which is Reggie, who's normally a jerk in the comics. And here he's the most empathetic character. I really liked when he also defended what Dilton was wearing at the party, right? And when you realize that that Reggie knows that Dilton is more or less, like, attracted to him, in love with him, and he's still so empathetic about it. And it's very Zoe Akhtar kind of thing that you'd see only in her kind of films or shows. And a similar moment like that in Maiden Heaven 2 might not have, like, floated as well as, say, in Archies, because of the context behind it, because we know who Reggie is, we know who Dilton is, we've grown up with these characters. So it was very well... it was a very disarming moment. I really liked that. I watched Goldfish, one of my favorite Hindi films this year, at least released this year. It was in festivals a couple of years ago. But I really like Dipti Nawal and Kalki and them. Like, I think they gave some of the best performances in the year. For me, the final scene of that film will always stand out. It's just a daughter sitting with her mother who has dementia and, you know, sort of sitting by the window and having tea. There's a lot of context behind it, so I'll save it. Like, I won't really get into it, but I hope people watch it when it does stream at some time soon. It's one of my favorite films this year, as was Three of Us, Avinash Arun's Three of Us, where I think, again, you know, Shefali Shah was great in that, Jaideep Alawat, and there's a scene where they are sitting in a merry-go-round sort of thing, I think, in a... And she's just, and it's basically about her revisiting her memories from her childhood before she forgets them. She has dementia again. Again, that's a common theme in the films I love. So it's just about her sort of communicating with him and telling him that this is why she came back to her small town to sort of reminisce about things before she forgets them. It's a lovely moment. It has two fantastic actors at the top of their game. So I think that was definitely one of my favorite moments of the year as well. And I think Shah Rukh's monologue in Jawan towards the end, which was very Firbi Dil Hindustani-ish, was very nice to hear. You know, it's not easy being a superstar and having and making the kind of commentary he did in that film. And even though he just broke the fourth wall, spoke straight into the camera, I thought it was a very powerful moment.
Right. Any standout female performances? You mentioned Deepthi Nawal and Shefali Shah,
and, you know, I mean, if you're going to count the shows, there are many, because Rajshri Deshpande in Trial by Fire is probably one of the best of the year. You know, I mean, I think there were like a bunch of like very good performances. Normally, like I slot them into the same bracket, like without really realizing their gender. So I didn't really think about like, you know, whether the female performances were standouts as well. But I think these ones I mentioned, and I think Neena Gupta and Maskma Rehne Ka was very nice. Like she's mostly always good, but I think she really understood. Jackie Shroff in this film was heartbreakingly good. I'm so glad someone cast him as a regular, normal widower who's just heartbreaking to watch. He reminded me of like a distant cousin of Sergeant Fernandez in Lunchbox. I think I wrote that in the review also. And it's a very heartbreaking image also, if you think about it. Really enjoyed Vicky Kaushal, even though it's a male performance, I know, in Sam Bahadur. I think Tabu in Kufia was very interesting. It was a fascinating, even though the film didn't entirely work for me, it was a fascinating performance. And Kareena and Janeja, I thought that was a good performance. I thought there were moments. Also, one of my favorite moments of the year was when she does the karaoke on stage and looks at Vijay Verma's character. The way she looks at him and switches mid-song, like she goes from being reluctant to suddenly enjoying herself and suddenly having this confidence of a woman, and he almost melts when he sees that. And then she becomes like this Bollywood fan almost, and she becomes Kareena Kapoor, baby. That is a fantastic moment. Mm. It's a standout moment for me this year. I think other than that, that's pretty much it. Mm.
Yeah, I think more will come later when you think about it, right? It's hard to just come up with suddenly if you're not prepared. So didn't want to put you on the spot, but anything stands. But okay, what's your favorite sort of like the series? Trial by Fire, of course, you mentioned, but there was also Mumbai Diaries 2, Scoop, The Hard, Jubilee. Anything that's like your favorites out of this?
My favorite Hindi shows of the year were like Kora, Trial by Fire, The Hard, Mumbai Diaries 2. And I think there was one more. I'm missing one good show. A Scoop I really liked, but you know, I don't think it was right up there for me in terms of like my favorite shows of the year. I think, oh yeah, Farzi. Correct. Yes. I really enjoyed Farzi. So
got it. And have you seen Kala Pani by any chance?
I'm still like just an episode or two in. Because it's the end of the year, I'm catching up on a lot of stuff that I missed. I'm not entirely in it. Like I wouldn't put it as one of my best shows, but a very interesting topic, and I'm definitely going to finish watching it. I did have to also mention that I recently watched 12th Fail finally. And, of course, we didn't review it because it's a Vidhu Vinod Chopra film and Film Companion Conflict of Interest. It's still playing in theaters, single show here and there. It's still running almost houseful in a lot of it's one of the sleeper hits of the year. And I think Vikrant Mase is one of the best performances in the year across medium. Like, 12th Fail, first of all, I really like the film. I'll talk about it some other time. But Vikrant Mase, for me, is a standout. Like, he would be in my top five of the year.
Right, definitely. And then, anything, films that really disappointed you? That you were looking forward and it turned out to be big disappointment?
I'd say like Sam Bahadur was one of that because of Meghna Gulzar, the team behind Razi, Vicky Kaushal. It was a fairly disappointing film. Eventually, it was fairly bland. I think I was disappointed. Same with Made in Heaven. I was fairly disappointed by it. I wanted to like that show. It really didn't work eventually. I'd say all of what Vishal Vadva did this year also. I did not like Charlie Chopra at all. I had the expectations. Didn't work. Same with Kufia. Even though there were moments I'll remember. I think in that sense, I don't think it's been his best year, but I'm glad that he's made a web show, he's made a film, and they're out there for everyone to watch. But I was pretty disappointed by both of those titles. Jubilee didn't work for me entirely. I know it's on a lot of people's lists and they really loved that show, but I was fairly disappointed by the overall effect that show had on me. Like, I didn't love it as much as I wanted to. And I think, it's a fantastically crafted show, but it didn't work for me. Like, I don't remember a lot from it now. And that's a problem.
I think same holds for Guns and Gulab, I guess.
Yeah, it was a mixed bag. And I think like after a while, it just felt like they were going in any direction. So it just, it was fun to watch because, you know, a great cast. But I don't think there was more method to it as much as, say, Farzi. So, yeah.
Any good documentaries that...
So I think the Veerappan documentary has to be mentioned. Like, I watched it only recently, parts of it, like at least most of it. And I thought it was one of the better non-fiction efforts this year. Other than that, like, I mean, not a lot of, like, I didn't manage to catch a lot of Indian documentaries, but I really enjoyed this documentary I recently watched on Netflix called American Symphony. I think I wrote a column on it also. It's beautiful. It's one of the best documentaries I've seen in a while. And it's, of course, it's American and it's not Indian or anything. But for those who are wondering, just watch it. It's a great meditation on like art and life and grief, and it's a lovely film.
Any favorite songs this year? Could be anything. English, Hindi, no bar.
Songs, I don't know, it's tough. Like, I've never really been a film soundtrack, like Hindi song person per se. Like, I always look at songs in context of the film, so I don't listen to them outside of the film, so I don't really have a earworm for the year or anything, or I didn't enjoy the music as much as I did, say, some of the films or the shows that I watched.
Okay, and then what are you looking for next year?
I am really looking forward to I think Sriram Raghavan's Merry Christmas, first of all. I'm looking forward to watching Hrithik Roshan and Fighter, because I'll watch Hrithik Roshan in anything now. I think he owns the screen, and I would love to watch more of him, especially in action films. And Fighter looks, I don't know, it looks promising maybe. I don't know a lot of films that are releasing next year. I normally know only 1 or 2 weeks before they do. But I'd say I'm very curious about this film called Kill, which did well in festivals. It's a very violent film, action film, and it did well in Toronto. And I think it's co-produced by Guneet Munga and Karan Johar, and directed by the man who directed Fame Game also, I think. So I think that's been getting a lot of hype. I'd be interested to see how we do a stylish action film or a gory action film. And hopefully we'll get to see that next year. Otherwise, yeah, I don't really know what else is releasing next year. So,
yeah, I'm also looking through the list. I think this is not very clear right now, except that it's just... Love, Sex or Dhoka 2, Dibakar Banerjee's, that's coming. And then I think Inside Out 2 is also coming.
Oh, wow, that is definitely
Okay, and any film festivals you'll be covering next year? Anything planned? Sundance?
Nothing planned, really. Hard to tell, because it's too expensive, and it's not like, you have to find your own funding, you have to hope the festivals cover it. So I don't think a lot of us can afford to go on our own buck, but hopefully if I'm in luck, I get to go somewhere. Otherwise, there's always online, I can cover them. I'm not in that phase where I'm desperate to like really do a lot of coverage of film festivals. There's a lot of stuff releasing year to cover, like to write about, to review week to week, so I don't really think of it until before the festival. But maybe I'll cover a little bit of Sundance online. I won't be going there for sure, let's see. Hopefully I'll have a story to tell by this time next year.
Right, okay. So this is what I had for today, just a review of the how the year went by. So before we wrap up, any like sort of writing advice, since we focus a little bit on writing today, any other tips that you can think of?
The only, I mean, I wouldn't call it a tip, but it's something I learned this year. And it, I just like, I've realized that, you know, we shouldn't be afraid to sort of live the way we do or go through the kind of experiences we do, because, you know, I've had a sort of difficult year personally, and I've lost a very close friend, and I've gone through a fair amount of experiences that have made me grow or maybe like really reflect as a person. And so never, probably never be afraid to like experience grief, sadness, or pain, and sort of like go through it, knowing that, you know, eventually, I think as a writer, it sort of, in the long run, it all adds up and it'll all come to you, and it'll help you maybe become a better artist, better at your craft also. Like, never be afraid to connect your life to your art, like, and continue doing that. And I hope to continue doing that, because for me it's very therapeutic, and that's why I really enjoyed watching that American Symphony documentary, because this is exactly what it speaks about. It's about a very famous musician whose wife is going through cancer, again leukemia. She's having her treatment after many years. Again, she's relapsed, and he's trying to balance his life as an artist, as someone who's broken out, won like dozens of Grammy awards, and with her life in the hospital and the pain she's going through, and how he derives inspiration from that. And I think that captures the gist of life. A lot of people say, "Oh, you might milk your pain, you might milk your happiness. Everything is for content." But that documentary gave me the confidence to continue living and continue writing the way I do.
Great advice. Okay. All right. So thanks again, Raul. And I think thanks to everybody who's been listening this year. And hopefully we'll be back in the new year. Otherwise, happy new year to everybody, and we'll be back soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right.